Good morning, Lee Stark. Thanks for swapping around today with us.
Always happy to help.
We appreciate it immensely because we have a chat with a politician each and every Sunday morning, and he had to go into where you don't get phone service. So he was concerned that he wouldn't be able to chat with me. But this is a really good segue, even if I say so myself, into our first listener question. Are you ready, Lee?
All right, go for it.
Here we go. This is from Peter. Peter says, here's a tech question I'd love you to have successfully answered. Why? He says, with all the technology we have available, can we not get full coverage everywhere and anywhere when we talk on our mobile phones? Can you shine some light on that for Peter Lee?
Yeah, absolutely. So your cell phone coverage is dependent on towers at the moment. I mean, there are other technologies where that's theoretically possible, like a satellite phone connection is a perfect example of that. If you have a satellite phone, you can get coverage anywhere because satellites cover pretty much the breadth of the Earth where you are at the time. But satellite phones are incredibly expensive. Satellite service is even more prohibitive in cost. And so typically the only satellite calls you find are in emergency calls. So you can find satellite calls in the current iPhone range, and you can, I think they're also part of some of the upcoming Android phones as well, but they're only in case of emergency because of the cost of a satellite connection. It is incredibly expensive to do. So satellite is the answer to what you're talking about. For everyone else, we use towers, and those towers are limited by range. So you pop up a tower in certain places, and it creates very similar to what you would do at home with Wi-Fi. You try to create as much coverage as you can by setting up more towers. We get good tower coverage in cities, typically. Rural Australia has a harder time because you have to set up different towers in different places, and that gets expensive, and they don't typically go for very long distances dependent on topography. So the answer to your question is it's technically possible with satellite. If you have a satellite phone and you're happy to pay a stupid amount of money, absolutely, that gets you around it. If you don't, you have to rely on towers. There is a bit of a catch. You could fix this with Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi connections allow you to actually kind of boost your signal because you're using your Wi-Fi as your sort of like part of your back end. It's a patching system. So pretty much any phone in the past 7 years supports a feature called VO Wi-Fi or Voice over Wi-Fi. And it pops up occasionally as a little icon on Android phones and doesn't really happen on iPhone, but you just see the Wi-Fi symbol. That's how you know. And so if you have Wi-Fi that gets you around it, and the answer, the question I hear your reader is going to ask is, how would I do this in my car? You get a mobile Wi-Fi hotspot and you travel with that because that could actually act as that. The catch on that, however, is that the further you go for like rural Australia, your 5G or whatever is mobile hotspot is dependent on the same problems as your regular phone. So it's not going to change things dramatically. But depending on where you go, if you live in a city and you're like, my 5G or my 4G reception is not great, but I might try it with a different company or I might be somewhere else that has it in like a business or a home, you can patch that or improve that using voice over Wi-Fi.
Was there talk about Elon Musk with his service for TV? Was there talk about Elon Musk taking over something to do with phones so that you would have, I suppose, a satellite service with your phone as well through SpaceX?
Yeah, so Starlink supports
that's that it, Starlink, yeah. Not SpaceX.
Yeah, Starlink supports satellite connections, and Telstra has a version of Starlink that you can use. You can also buy Starlink as well. It still doesn't, I mean, you could use Starlink as that sort of mobile powering device. So you can get a mobile version of Starlink, and you can travel around the country, stick that in your car if you really want to, or stick it in a van or a camper van, a perfect example. And you could use that as your mobile traveling Wi-Fi hotspot, and your phone could stay connected to that. That's definitely an option. Starlink's price is not necessarily inexpensive either. I mean, it's not satellite phone calls. You're still basically, in that example, using Wi-Fi as sort of like the patch. That is definitely an option, but it's not necessarily a satellite phone call per se.
Okay. There you go. I hope that answers your question. Peter Kenny says, I am looking at buying a filament 3D printer. Do you have any experience on them? Do you have any you would recommend under $1,500? A filament 3D printer.
I don't have many. I don't have any I would recommend. I haven't reviewed a 3D printer in so long, largely because they're so loud and they have such niche purposes. Film 3D printers, like most 3D printers, allow you to print objects, and they tend to be quite loud in doing so. The way I described it when they first came out was it sounds like clowns screaming at each other. It's kind of bizarre, and they take a while to do. I would honestly just do research, because the spend on a 3D printer usually comes from how much you pay for the consumables long term. So find out, rather, which have the most compelling and the best priced consumables, because most 3D printers are largely doing the same thing these days.
Ella says, I have a custom-built PC. It is roughly 2 years old. Since getting it, any time Windows requires an update, if I do not update straight away, it goes into the sleep mode, and it will not start up for 24 to 48 hours, at which point, when it wakes up as normal, it will not let me update. What is causing this?
It's not a custom PC problem. It sounds like it's a setting issue in your power settings, actually. It could be. It's entirely possible. There's lots of different solutions here. We typically, when we deal with PC problems, we deal with the common denominators, and it could be your power supply. If you've got a custom PC, it's entirely possible that it has to do with the power supply, but it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like it's a setting inside Windows related to power in general. I would be looking at the power settings inside Windows to see if there's anything that actually is set to, say, automatically sleeping, because it sounds a lot like it's waiting for some sort of push over the network to wake itself up.
Ella says that after the 24-48 period, when it wakes up, she's then able to do the update as normal, or it does the update as normal. It's just that 24-48 hour period that it goes to sleep and it won't wake up.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like... Windows PCs have this feature called wake up basically on a network. And so it sounds like it's waiting for a network signal. That's what it sounds like, just listening to this offhand. There are two places I'd go to check that. First is your Windows settings in general, but another location is possibly your BIOS. So when you turn up a computer for the first time, it'll load up sort of things called a UEFI or a BIOS. You hit delete or escape quickly, and it will load up that screen. Sometimes F8 or F4 gets you to it as well. It sounds like there's a setting in there where it's basically just remaining effectively. It's waiting for a wake command. That's what it sounds like to me. But again, one of these things is very much, it kind of needs to be in front of me before I can identify all the problems.
If you'd like to ask Lee a question, you can send those questions to me via email. And as I say, you can do it 7 days a week if you like. Let's talk a couple of topics here. Google, there are new phones, new watches, and new earbuds coming out from Google. Is that correct?
That is, and actually, I can, since sending you that release, all the embargoes have broken, so I can actually tell you what I think about them, which is nice. So, I'll just do that then. There's four new phones. They're pretty much designed as kind of like the iPhone for people who would love an iPhone but prefer Android instead. The bigger one to look forward to is the Pixel 9 Pro XL, which is a bit of a mouthful of a name, but it looks a lot like an iPhone does these days. It has an incredible camera, probably one of the better cameras I've seen in a phone to date. You can't pretty much take a bad picture with it. There's also a smaller version of that, the Pro XL, and even a smaller, a same size version, but with one less camera in the Pixel 9. What Google is doing with these phones is all about AI this year. As you'd expect, it's in pretty much every story that we talk about. And Google's AI approaches this year are that you can edit things out of images and replace them. You can replace friends in images. Well, not friends. You can replace dogs in images with dolphins, as we found out. You can generate images out of nothing, much like we've generated music out of nothing directly in the phone. And some of the more unusual things is that when you take a screenshot, it will now analyze what's happening inside that screenshot, like you've listened to a great radio show and you're trying to work out who you were listening to. If you snap a picture of that streaming podcast, it will actually look at the text in that screen and allow you to add that information to your calendar or information that you're actually linking to about yourself. So it kind of tries to find everything that's part of your life and allows you to look for that and connect it all with AI. Effectively, it's supposed to integrate better with your life. There's also a foldable version coming very soon, which is very much the same high-end camera, high-end new chip, all about AI, but it folds. It unfolds into about a 7.6-inch device and folds up into something slightly smaller. So it's pretty much geared at people who aren't sure if they want a phone or a tablet. Like, you're not sure if you want a phone or an iPad. That's kind of where to go. They've also got a new version of the watch. It's mostly for people who want to run, because Google owns Fitbit, so it's very, it's got a run coach in there to try and teach you and better recommend how you should run. And there's a pair of earbuds coming as well. Interestingly about Google's earbuds is that, much like the AirPods, they will work on an iPhone, because a pair of AirPods will work on Android, but they're mostly made for Android. They're made to connect with all the Pixel services and do all those fun AI things, so in the end, you're always talking to an AI pretty much no matter what you do.
What about a tri-foldable phone? What is a tri-foldable phone? One would think it's a foldable phone that, folds three times?
Yeah, kind of. You've pretty much got it. So if you imagine that most foldable phones are basically a tablet that folds in half. So that's just a bifold, effectively, kind of like a book. A tri-foldable phone is this really interesting concept that's turned up, which is more like a pamphlet. It looks like it folds three times. So it's a basically, if you can imagine a 10-inch iPad and it folds three ways, so it actually collapses smaller into a 6-inch phone. That's what this concept is. We know that companies have been experimenting it, but we've never seen one in person up until the past week, where Huawei, a company that doesn't really offer anything in Australia for phones anymore because of some really important issues with the US government that prevent it from releasing proper Android phones in everywhere else pretty much but China. It's created a 10-inch foldable that folds three times into a phone, and the unfolding, basically, if you can imagine, I don't know whether I want an iPad or I don't know if I want a phone, if you want both, this is that concept. If Huawei has one, it's very likely Samsung and other companies are testing the technology as well. Huawei's whole pitching, it's very likely it's around $4,000 for the privilege of this thing. That's a minimum price based off the technology, so it's probably coming, but it will not be cheap when it arrives.
And I imagine if it's tri-folding, it'd be damn thick too.
Yeah, well, I mean, so we think what's happening here, so you can actually get foldables quite thin these days, but when they fold up together, they fold up quite thick. So we suspect it's somewhere between 12 and 15 mils thickness when collapsed as a foam, which is, in fairness, it sounds thick. It's basically almost like having two iPhones stacked together, almost. That would be about 16 mils, but probably a little bit shy of that. But unfolded, it would probably be closer to the 5 to 6 mil mark in thickness. The iPad Pro, the 13-inch, the incredibly expensive one, is 5.1 mil thin. And we know that next year's iPhone, not this year's one, but the iPhone 17, will more than likely have a variation that uses this technology, largely because often the iPad is a testing ground for Apple's ideas. So we've seen this ahead of time. We know what's going to happen, not this year, but next year. That suggests that Huawei could probably get it unfolded quite thin, but folded, yeah, it'll be a chunker in your pocket.
The 3G network was going to be shut down by Optus and Telstra at the end of August. There's now been a lifeline thrown out for people that were a little concerned about that, and that period of time has been extended.
Yeah, that's right. It was supposed to actually shut down, but pretty much at the end of this week. It was supposed to shut down before that, around June. It's been pushed back several times. Telstra and Optus have basically said this last one is basically a lifeline for a marketing push to try and get the remainder of people who haven't made the jump to make their way to a new phone, because that's what it is. It also affects some people with early 4G phones. They're also affected, and maybe if you bought your phone from a different country that wasn't Australia, sometimes they're not mapped the way they should be. The whole problem, to be honest, is that not every device switches over to a 4G network, especially old 3G devices, when they want to make a triple O call. That's a real problem. Sometimes they'll default to 3G networks, and so will the 3G phones. They have no choice. It's not a problem with your SIM, and it's not technically a problem with the telco, because they're just shutting down the 3G network to make way for something else later on. So you have until October 28 now to find out whether you need to upgrade and to do it as quickly as possible. Each telco is offering, depending on your situation, you might get a free phone, or you might even be able to get a discount to a new phone. There are definite options out there. But if you're not sure, and it's really beneficial if you check your parents, relatives, friends, people who don't normally know how to do these things, do you just send the number 3 or text the number 3 to the service 3498? Both Telstra, Optus, and the mobile operators using their services support it. It will send back a message right away way to tell you whether you're affected or not.
Last but not leastly, Apple is set to open iPhone payments for hotels, transport, etc. I don't understand this. Treat me like I'm a five-year-old. I mean, I can pay for a hotel booking with my iPhone now or tap and go. What is Apple looking at doing that we can't currently use our iPhone for to pay?
Oh, well, you can't currently. This is about the payment technology, not about the payment itself. So I don't have to treat you like a five-year-old. Imagine if you're at a hotel room and instead of pulling out your key, you use your phone for that. That's what this is for. So they've never allowed this before. And the technologies are really similar. NFC used for both travel payments, like for an Opal card in New South Wales, or for a hotel key, uses NFC. It's the same technology, near-field communication, that we use for mobile payments. But they've never allowed that access. It's one of the reasons why if you get onto a bus or train in Sydney, when you tap on, you're actually just tapping with your phone. You're just using your Visa or you're using a debit card effectively to tap on. You're not using your Opal card. Previously, they've never been able to tap into that. Apple is opening that up on the back of some of the EU anti-regulation stuff happening overseas, and they'll be opening it up to Australia, among one of the countries. So the next time you book into a hotel, once this is enabled, they'll be able to say, do you have an iPhone or do you have a supported phone? And they'll be able to transfer the actual unlock command directly to your phone, which makes it a lot more difficult for someone to break into because you will have the key, Brent, no one else.
Is this going to be delivered through a software update to an iPhone, or will you need to go out and buy yourself a brand new iPhone and get the very latest software? Because I understand when Apple releases their new software, which is called iOS 18, it won't necessarily work with all the bells and whistles on an older iPhone. Will you need to go and buy a new phone, and how long is it before this technology is rolled out?
So we don't think the technology for unlocking for doors and other things will be out until the end of the year, to be honest, because the actual development stuff that they're doing only comes out around September. The thing you're talking about for the iOS 18, that's AI features or Apple Intelligence. It won't roll out to all phones unless you have the iPhone 15 Pro or Pro Max. But you'll still get iOS 18. You just won't get the AI stuff, and that's because of the chip differences. But our expectation is that NFC like this should work on every iPhone that's supported. It should go back quite a distance because the NFC technology for mobile payment is pretty much and has been pretty much the same for years. Nothing about that is new. It's just being able to open up this technology to use something else. It'll be down to developers, so Hilton's and Shangri-La's and companies that own hotels, they'll be the ones to try and employ this technology, but it will likely just be an update to your phone, and when you go to the lobby to check in, they'll just issue a command, much like how you'd get a wallet or a card sent to your wallet on your phone, and you'd have that specifically for your phone at that time for however long you're staying.
Okay, terrific. Done and dusted. Again, many thanks for swapping times around. We'll be back to normal next Sunday. We look forward to talking to you after 9 o'clock.
Always happy to help.
Thank you, Lee. Have a good week, mate. Bye-bye. If you've got tech questions for Lee Stark, send them to me via email. Lee has a website, and he reviews all sorts of things, and it's if you're into technology, it has all sorts of articles on it as well. His website's pickr.com.au, pickr.com.au, and as I said, we'll talk tech again next Sunday morning after 9 o'clock.